Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hi there. Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. This is Matt, your host. This week I'm joined by Allison Dicey, Ellie Heath, and Kaylee Suliak, also known as Girl Brain. This Edmonton-based sketch comedy troupe were making their second appearance at the Toronto Sketch Comedy Festival and were able to take some time to sit down with me to talk about Mike Birbiglia's Sleepwalk With Me. Now, the festival is still on, so if you have a chance, get out to see some great sketch comedy. You have until March 15th. If you aren't in Toronto but are in Edmonton, Girl Brain make regular appearances at the Roxy, about once every 3 months. So I highly recommend getting out there and seeing whatever show they're putting on. They do a lot of original material every performance, so it's well worth getting out there to see. Mike Birbiglia is an actor, comedian, director, improviser, and storyteller. A multifaceted talent, he was born in Shrewsbury, Massachusetts in 1978 and springboarded his success and contributing to This American Life into multiple screen appearances, directing opportunities, writing projects, as well as creating not one, but two films, as well as several specials and albums. His second film, Don't Think Twice, is based on his own improvising experiences, and as somebody who's taken improvising classes and done some improvisation himself, I can tell you, I've met every single one of those people in that movie, and I am probably a pretty close match to at least one of them. Sleepwalk With Me is a much more intimate story. It is a direct story from his life, recounting anxiety, depression, and the human brain, how it copes with these things when we least expect it. Sleepwalk With Me was recorded at The Moth in New York City as part of a storytelling series in August of 2008. It was later used as a part of This American Life's episode 361, The Fear of Sleep, before being adapted into an album and a film. It's an interesting juxtaposition. The album is pretty much exactly the same as the This American Life special, with a little bit added on to the end, the beginning and the end, which gives it a much more robust feel. We talk about this during the show. The film is a completely different beast, and is well worth watching, but has a very different feel. So sit back, and if you haven't already listened to it, give Sleepwalk Me a listen. It's available on all streaming services. Check out the movie if you can as well for an interesting juxtaposition. And if you have the opportunity, try to catch the recorded special from The Moth. Once you've done one or all of those, come on back and listen to us chat with Girl Brain. So today I am here with Girl Brain from Edmonton. They're in Toronto for the Sketchfest 2020. I'm joined by Allison, Kaylee, and Ellie. So thank you for joining me today. So,
thank you for having us.
So, you know, we talked to you last Sketchfest, so this is your second one. How are you enjoying it?
Oh, it's so great. Yeah, we flip and love it. Yeah.
Yeah. So much fun.
So is there any shows that you've seen or anything that you've done that's really sort of stood out this year?
Yeah, like we saw Carson and Trevor do a bunch of flips. Mm-hmm. That was awesome. And we saw
Cam Wiley's 25th mm-hmm. anniversary show. That was also really good.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Just a lot of the heavy hitters. Yes. Of I'm the excited Toronto to comedy scene.
John Blair was great too. Oh yeah, he was awesome.
Also, I think it was Carson and Taylor.
Oh, my bad.
You said Trevor.
Trevor, but
how dare you?
Sorry. Sorry, Taylor.
So, you guys have been performing for a few years now. Like, how did you all sort of meet and sort of become a troupe?
Well, Kaylee and I, so this is Ellie talking. Kaylee and I met when we were 15 at drama camp. And then Allison and I met about 7 years ago. No, actually 8 years ago, doing a Fringe touring production. And the three of us were actresses in Edmonton, so we sort of knew each other just from the community there, and mm-hmm. were friends and out of work actresses, but also like all really good writers, and so we just decided to collaborate.
Excellent. And what drew you specifically to comedy as a platform? Like, what was like not necessarily as a troupe, but just individually? Like, what made you find, like, I want to use comedy to just tell stories and make jokes?
Well, I think we were all just kind of like sitting around laughing one day at each other's stories, and we were like, well, you know what, like maybe other people will find this funny too. And it kind of happened coincidentally with a new theater mm-hmm. opening in Edmonton that was specifically a comedy theater.
Oh.
And they were kind of looking for, you know, there was a lot of improv that they had scheduled, and they were kind of looking for, you know, more sketch troupes and something a little bit more theatrical. So yeah, we pitched them the idea of Girl Brain, and they were like, yeah, sure. And we were like, well, I guess we're doing this now. I hope people find us funny.
Well, and you've gotten great reviews. You've toured and done festivals not just in Toronto but all over the place.
Yeah. We did Toronto Sketch Fest last year. We also did Philly Sketch Fest, which mm-hmm. was a lot of fun. We did Central Florida Sketch Fest. We've been to Winnipeg. We've been to Fairview, Alberta.
That thriving and, metropolis.
And we've yeah. been to Fort Saskatchewan. And we will go anywhere.
Anywhere.
Well, you got to go where the comedy takes you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, my grandfather is actually from the prairies. He was from actually Saskatchewan, and he was a musician.
Oh.
And it, like, he wrote a ballet all about Shadow on the Prairie, which is all about living in the prairies, going insane, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So it really informed his work. Do you find, you know, growing up, like being from Edmonton and being in Alberta, how does that define, or how does that like shape your material?
That's a good question.
Interesting question.
I have like a little bit of a theory, just in, and I think that this is just about Canada, like in general, and comedians in Canada, because I find people in Canada are very funny. Mm-hmm. And even when we were like in Philly Sketchfest, I, not to like denote or, you know, say that the people from Philly were not funny, but like I just found that the comedians from Canada were really strong, and I think that a lot of it is just those long winters, not yeah. really having a lot to do. Yeah, you have to find ways to entertain yourself and to survive and to thrive and keep life colorful, yeah. even despite the snow and the muck and the gray. And so I feel like being in the prairies where things are pretty flat and pretty colorless for most of the year,
mm-hmm.
being creative is a real respite.
Mm-hmm. Now, your show, which I saw the first night, yeah. it was super energetic. It was awesome. So I'm glad I got to see it. What is your because you had a lot. You had the skillet as the, sort of the through line,
yep.
But you had a lot of sort of different angles and different sort of ideas in there. So what's your process for when you sit down to write a show? Like, how do you approach it? Do you come with just like, these are the ideas, and then find the thing, or like the nub to get you through it? Or you come with that idea and then build out? Like, what do you do to
I think we're still experimenting and learning, and the opportunity to go to festivals like this has really taught us a lot, because we get to see more than just what's going on in Edmonton.
Mm-hmm.
We usually write on a theme, and we write separately, and then we will have like a deadline or whatever, and then come together and then collaborate off of that. And it's nice that we get to do regular shows in Edmonton. We mm-hmm. started off doing a monthly show, so we generated a lot of material in the first year, and now we do longer shows kind of less frequently. So
it's like bi-monthly.
Yeah. I guess for this one, that skillet silliness. I kind of came up with that. That was, it's just a little nugget, and then it transformed into something that ended up being the whole show, like, that took us through. So sometimes, like, we don't do that, but I think we're getting better at that and seeing other shows, like Craig Scorgi's show and stuff, that kind of inspired us to have a journey and take us on a theatrical arc for the whole show.
Yeah, so it's more like a, we're experimenting, more like a play.
Yeah.
Format, instead of just like sketch and sketch and sketch, and it's like, it's nice to see a through line a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it can help, like, having done some in the past, it can also help, like, really keep the audience on board when you might have something that doesn't necessarily play as well as something earlier. Then you're like, oh, okay, well, get where we're going, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. I think, too, like, just as we've grown and stuff, we love doing character work, and we love getting out of ourselves and playing crazy characters. But at the same time, as we grow and as our audience becomes more familiar with us, it's nice to sort of experiment with playing ourselves on stage and allowing our audience to get to know us better and who we are, you know, just as people.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Now, you mentioned doing a bunch of festivals. During the album, you all laughed at the deli line joke.
Oh, right.
Oh, my gosh.
Have you had any bananas types of gigs where you're like, why am I performing here?
Yes, Fort Saskatchewan.
Which is a great little place.
It is a great, it's a great place.
But we happened to find ourselves at a bar, which is not a great venue, we discovered, for sketch comedy, because it's super loud and people want to talk and drink and have a nice night the way that
you know, not necessarily listen to what's going on.
If there's
stage.
A band playing at a bar, I feel like you can enjoy it and still, you know, have a conversation. No, sketch comedy doesn't work that way. You got to listen to the setup.
It's been really interesting because we all have like a theater background. Mm-hmm. It's been really interesting just delving into sketch comedy, because I feel like a lot of people don't know what sketch comedy is. You tell people we're sketch comedians, we do sketch comedy, and they go, oh, improv? It's like, no, we write our sketches and we rehearse them and perform them. And then some people think it's stand up. And we've definitely had gigs where we got booked and I don't think that they had any concept of what we do.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting. And that bar gig in Fort Saskatchewan, I don't think that they knew really what we do was going to play out in that scenario.
Yeah.
And yeah, it felt really off brand.
Yeah. Now, so that's like the bad end of things. Is there a performance that you really like, a zany performance that you really enjoyed, like anywhere where things?
Like, oh god! Like all of
last
them.
Night. Last night. At
last night.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Comedy bar.
Yeah.
Dream come true. Also, we have like us all being actors, and we went through acting school and dreaming of performing on the Citadel stage. And we got to do that in November.
Awesome.
And we did it with our own material, and it felt fucking gangbusters. It was awesome.
Excellent. Yeah.
Honestly, any of our shows that we do and we produce in Edmonton are stellar and, like, just so enjoyable. And it's been really great. Like, as we've grown and been together, we've really built a truly, like, great audience. Like, our audience is so behind us and so supportive and so loving, and we just feel like every time we get up on stage at the Roxy, which is our new venue that we're performing in, we are met with such massive love, and it's just astounding.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
And we get that kind of feedback, like, from other audience members or, like, guests that we have on the show as well. They're just like, what? Like, the energy in the room is insane.
I mean,
like,
and you've had some terrific guests, too. I mean, you had members, Baroness Von Sketch, on the show and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you've been able to collaborate with some really amazing people. So that's got to be...
Yeah, fun. Honestly, I think part of what we do, part of our mandate is to spread love and support and empowerment. And so to be able to give the opportunity to other artists from other performance aspects like music or burlesque or stand-up comedy, and to be able to like grow other people's audiences mm-hmm. is so awesome.
Yeah. Well, today we listened to Mike Birbiglia's Sleepwalk with me. Mm-hmm. So what led you to choose this album?
I really love that he is, it's almost like a one-man show. Like he's very theatrical and a really, really good writer. Yeah. So we kind of relate to that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Very good storyteller.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the, like a lot of the inspiration that we get for our own sketches comes from our own lives. And so I think, yeah, listening to Mike Birbiglia, like a lot of his material is drawn from his own life experiences. Mm-hmm. And also too, he's so down to earth. And I find that a lot of his comedy is really just, I don't know, simple and accessible.
Yeah.
And also not offensive, really inclusive. Yeah. And yeah, I just, his energy is really great and really grounded, and he seems like a good human.
Yeah, yeah. What was all of your first introduction to Mike Birbiglia's work? Like, where did you first hear it?
This American Life. I heard him for that same one that we listened to.
The first time that I heard Mike Birbiglia, I was in a truck with Allison driving back from Regina. We went to Regina to audition for something. Right. And I feel like we listened to Sleepwalk with me.
Oh.
And I also kind of fell asleep during it. But also, I just remember thinking that he was really great. And yes, I did fall asleep, but it was a very long drive. But yeah, it was with Allison.
Oh, yeah, that's a nice story.
Yeah. Driving back from Regina.
I remember that night, actually, because it was super late. We drove there and back in the same day, and the stars were incredible. We actually stopped and got out to look at them.
Didn't we see the Northern incredible. Lights?
Yeah, we saw the Northern Lights.
Yeah. I also, this is way too much information. But we had this audition, and I pooped a lot, and I thought I had diaper rash. And after we got back from that trip, I found out I had herpes. So,
oh no!
Yeah.
Oh.
Wow. A lot happened at that trip.
What happens in Regina comes home from Regina.
I did not contract herpes in Regina, but I did in my Regina.
Oh no.
Okay, well, transitioning from that. So Mike, he's like a trained improviser. He's a stand-up comedian. He's a writer of books and film. How do you think the like improv and like, because he's got a very natural flow to him, and it's there's this genuineness to his entire storytelling. So how do you think things like improv and all of that sort of collaborated, like it went to shape this conversation that I guess he had with the audience?
I think like the more you do improv and the more you do comedy, I think you get, this is going to sound so cheesy, but like you get your authentic self like up to the surface. Mm-hmm. And so it's just ready to bam, like pop out at any point. And I think that that's what helps create like a really natural conversation between a performer and an audience member, is if you can let them in and like show yourself. And the more you're kind of forced out of your comfort zone and like forced out of playing other characters and just into yourself and like into revealing ridiculous things, like he says climbing up on top of a 5-foot dresser and then falling off of it. Like, the weirder you are and the more willing you are to reveal that, I think it just becomes easier to talk to people, because they're like, oh yeah, I'm weird too.
Yeah.
I want to let you in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. So my dad is a singer-songwriter, and he's really has a lot of stage fright, and a lot of it is around forgetting lines and fucking up and, yeah, not being perfect on stage.
Yeah.
And I always say to my dad that people just want to see a human being in front of them. They want to see themselves mirrored on stage. And so I think fucking up is part of life. And if you fuck up on stage and somebody sees it, you're immediately, it humbles you and it also lets them in.
Yeah.
And so I feel like a lot of improv is doing it and not being afraid to fail and also just accepting failure, you know, like accepting that it's not going to be perfect. But if you're there and you're present, something magic, you know, something, some magic might happen.
Yeah.
But failure is part of life and failure is part of the experience of being on stage. So I think that Mike Birbiglia, like one of the things that I like about him is that he's just, he's very present and I feel like he's not perfect and yeah. If he stumbles, like it's, he's the part of that, like being genuine is he accepts, you know, the moments that he stumbles over, which is really humbling and lovely.
Like it's one of the things that I've really enjoyed about this. There's not a wasted moment in the entire story. Like everything informs something further down the chain or then calls back to something earlier. Like,
he's great at the callbacks.
Yeah, like, and I re-listened to the This American Life episode, which is all about sleep fear, because I was like, okay, that's where I first heard it. And then I'm like, I went back I went back and forth between that and the album. And it's interesting because like that came out in 2008 and Stranger in the Night, I think is what they called the section. And it comes in maybe about a third of the way in. It comes in at the Jackal moment. So you miss all of the setup, all of the stuff about the doctor and stuff. And it's like, I don't know. It's like, what? I'm flumbling over my words. but it's interesting because that's the most important setup. Like that, all of that stuff about the cancer scare and going to the doctor and then the muffin, all of that informs all of his actions later on. That anxiety, which is really the underlying theme of the entire album, is like anxiety can kill you, don't let it rule you, like is lost. It's like, it's, you know, how important is that like laying down that runway for when you're writing a sketch, like, or writing something like a story like this?
Well, it's almost like a magic trick. Like, that's what I kind of felt as we were listening to that. And when, like, there's moments where I cried and there's moments where I was, like, on the edge of my seat and, like, howling with laughter. But it was all, like, I got to those high emotions because of the setup. Yeah. And, like, you're not going to go, holy shit, you had the card in your hat the whole time. Like you, unless you are like, there's no way he's going to pull a card out of whatever. It just feels like a magic trick where it all comes together and there's like, how the heck did he manipulate me so much to get me to this emotional state?
Even his pauses are great.
Yeah,
the pauses that he took, there were a couple like long ones near the end and I'm like, it's over now. Oh nope, there's another callback. And then like, yeah, he just has you like so captivated that you'll listen to his silence.
Yeah, and I mean the silence is almost as important as the words that comes to you, because 100%. It's giving you a moment for like a joke to sit in, or when he goes dark and heavy, and like lays out that truth or honesty.
Yeah,
he's really good at that.
He earns those moments.
It lets it sink in. It's like the moment when he revealed about cheating on his partner.
Oh, God. Yeah,
whereas like, oh, dude, that's horrible. And he's like, I know. I was here too.
Yeah. Like, he says, I'm in the future too.
Just to reiterate, when that moment happened, we all went, oh no. And he immediately said, I know. I felt like we were in a conversation together.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something too. It's like that felt very genuine. Like he knows what he's built mm-hmm. the story so carefully and planned out.
It's very precise.
Every move so well. He knows where you're going to go.
Yeah. Well, it felt like a work of art.
Yeah, it felt brilliant. Like in that moment when we all said, "Oh no, we're not in the room with him," but like he had that timing.
Responded immediately. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we were the audience, even though we weren't.
Yeah. Now. One of the things I really appreciate too is he's not afraid to be honest about his blemishes as as a human being, like like bringing out the element that he was unfaithful to his girlfriend, that he he wanted to marry her, but he was this anxiety that dominated his life led him to being afraid of that, and that ruined his relationship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He also did a movie. Don't Think Twice, which I actually rewatched today.
Oh yeah, that's a great movie.
Yeah, yeah. Or it's just full of all these people that I love.
Yeah.
And he plays the kind of I think if you've ever been in the improv community, you literally know every single character in that. There's you in your life. You're like, I know that person. Mm-hmm. Oh, that person's this person. And he plays like the slightly creepy older guy, but it's just not deliberately creepy, just he never grew up, so he still thinks he's like 23. So he's never afraid to commit to the honesty of a person, which, and it doesn't necessarily, they're not villains. He's not like trying to like, oh, this is evil. It's just like, this is humanity. He's like, and
definitely.
I find that really intriguing. Do you find that kind of drive in your work to present like honesty and
definitely
absolutely.
Well, I think one thing that that I really like about him is that I feel like he is really willing to showcase his blemishes and his flaws, but it's his blemishes and flaws, right?
Yeah.
I don't ever feel like he's drawing a huge, you know, this is what people are like, or I'm going to say this about humanity and about mankind.
Yeah.
He's just saying, this is who I am, and these are the challenges that I face. And so it feels really personal, and it feels like you can connect on it or connect to it in a personal way without feeling like you're being judged.
Yeah.
And I really feel that that's like an in for us in the work that we do, because so much of what inspires us and so much of what we write about is drawn from our personal lives. And so we're often saying things about who we are as humans rather than like drawing a big, overdrawn portrait of humanity or who people are or who women are or who men are.
Yeah.
It's just our personal experiences. And so, in that way, I think that's why we were really drawn to Mike Birbiglia's work.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
And like LA was saying earlier, like one of our goals is to celebrate young women.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a way that we accomplish that is by showing that we, who people sometimes look up to, are not all that perfect.
Yeah.
We make fun of ourselves and we say, I had a big poop in Regina and found out I had herpes.
I've got anxiety.
And we talk about anxiety and depression a lot in our show. Mm-hmm. And I think that just shining a light on those imperfections actually is a way of celebrating how great we are.
Also like turning the imperfections into comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Like it makes it easier for everybody to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, like if you can laugh about it, then that totally opens up a conversation more than, taking the blemishes super seriously, because then it makes you feel like, there's something wrong with you for having it. But, there could be millions of other people that have the same blemish,
Yeah, I truly like love his work for that same reason. Where just like highlighting humanity through himself. It's interesting too, because it's like a neat intersection of like three different skill sets in this. And I think this is possibly like, I tried the new one, which is his Netflix special that just came out recently, where he's talking about becoming a dad.
It's so good.
Yeah, where it's like, and it's amazing, and it's like, it follows a similar sort of style, mm-hmm. where I think he's sort of perfected this balance of like stand up and improv and storytelling, which are all three sort of separate pools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but here's the thing. They're not they inform, but they aren't.
They inform one another. Like,
yeah. Like, I find it's interesting because I think just in comedy, it can feel so separate, like improv, sketch comedy, stand-up, theater. But in where we're from in Edmonton, there's a theater, the Grindstone Theater, and it's a comedy theater. And so there's stand-up and there's improv and there's sketch comedy there. And I feel like from producing shows there and being there, we've all gotten to know each mm-hmm. other. And I feel like blending into one another is a really good thing. I think that all those forms of comedy really inform each other. Yeah. And so it's amazing that he's able to blend those together. But it also makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, it's like people try to silo it off. Like I've been sort of doing all of them over the last couple of years mm-hmm. and growing and trying to experiment. Like this year I finally started doing stand up. And I sort of skew more towards the Mike Birbiglia storytelling mm-hmm. side of things,
which is
just
great.
Because that's just my natural way of expressing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's like the skills that I learned in doing sketch stuff, the skills mm-hmm. that I learned, they all sort of inform one another. And I think it's like getting that cross pollination is really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's nice. I don't know. The thing that I really like about Mike Birbiglia is I feel like he has a genre all on his own. Like he's created something that is very genuine and authentic to who he is and the, you know, what he wants to communicate. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that really resonates with us because coming from a theater background into sketch comedy and also too, a lot of people in sketch comedy have an improv background, which we don't. And sometimes I think, I'm just speaking personally, it's like, oh, well, maybe we should have more improv experience. But it's like, no, fuck it. Like, we're coming at this how we come at it.
Yeah.
And nobody can do what we do. Mm-hmm. And we don't do what other people do. And that's fine. And that's great. And so, yeah, it's great to see somebody like Mike Birbiglia, who is not necessarily like other stand-ups, but who cares? He's himself he's fucking rocking what he does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the movie adaptation of this?
No.
I think I saw parts of it.
I watched it like about a week ago. Mm-hmm. It's been on my list to watch for a while. So I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, now I'll watch it. And I'd already listened to the album a couple of times at that point. And I'm like, it doesn't work. I mean, it's good.
Yeah.
If you hadn't heard, like even the truncated This American Life version, which is really all it covers, it just doesn't land the same way, which I found really interesting. Like mm-hmm. that conversation, because they have him as the narrator mm-hmm. and you've got this, the conceit is you're in the car with him while he's touring and he's coming home and he's telling you the story. Mm-hmm. And then it cuts to these moments. The cast is all amazing. It's like everybody up and down the cast list is somebody I love watching on the screen. But there's just something about like the intimacy of him telling you the story versus seeing it shown on the screen. And like there's all these little tiny jokes, like little call outs that if you've listened to the album, if you've listened to the Moth presentation, you go, oh, that's hilarious. I know that. But it just doesn't land.
Well, I think a lot of it is, like when you listen to a comedy album, it's kind of like listening to a music album.
Yeah.
Where you really have to, like, if you want to get it, you really have to, like, sit down and listen and pay attention, you know? And hearing something leaves so much up to your imagination, too. Like, I guarantee you, I laughed so hard at some of these things because I was just picturing him doing it in my brain. And so to see some things acted out might, like, ruin it a little bit and, like, distance yourself from the, like, experience that you've created your mind as well, you know?
Well, just like in everyday life, you know, there's people that are really good at telling stories.
Yeah.
And they can make going to the corner store to grab a cup of coffee the most interesting thing that you've ever heard.
Yeah.
when in all reality, they just went down to the corner store to grab a cup of coffee, you know? And like, I feel like he is one of those people. And so to hear it from his point of view is the entertainment factor.
Yeah.
Whereas if you were to put it in literal terms, it might not be as interesting.
Yeah. It's funny because like it is almost like this was too close in some ways, because like this being a real, like he directed and like, I think This American Life funded it kind of thing. So it was like a This American Life production, the first time they funded a film.
Mm. Wow.
But it's like, I think he, it almost felt like he was too close to the material in some ways, mm-hmm. that it didn't breathe in the mm-hmm. same way that he had the, gave it room to breathe when telling the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was his first
big was,
break, right?
Is Yeah. That was sort of what broke him, was that This American Life episode really went big.
Yeah.
And then he got a lot of buzz from that. And it was like an off-Broadway show for a while, and then became the movie. And it was like, by contrast, the like Don't Think Twice,
yeah,
felt much more natural. It felt like a better film,
yeah,
to me than Sleepwalk With Me,
mm-hmm.
because it's like there was a distance. He wasn't playing himself. He wasn't.
Yeah.
And they twisted the chronology around a little bit, so it's like, because he actually breaks up with his first girlfriend before mm-hmm. the window incident, and they sort of turn that around, and they also like change so it's funny, these little
they movied it
and it's these little nudges one way or another, like the wedding was his sister's wedding, mm-hmm. and that instead of his brother's wedding, but the wedding is what inspired the 3 a.m. disappearing act that mm-hmm. his girlfriend went on. So just it just shifted things around in this way that it's like, it really made me appreciate the little nuances when building a story. Like even these little details of pacing things and being honest with the details can really impact how something lands.
Well, and I think too, and I don't know exactly what happened with mm. his, with that thing, but I think sometimes when you get really big, really fast, like, maybe you don't get the opportunity to, like, you're growing so fast and you want to please everybody, and sometimes you lose sight of your mandate and your actual vision, and mm-hmm. perhaps there was a little bit of that, because I know with us, like, you know, as we've grown, we're always trying to, you know, keep our mandate in sight, but there have been times where we've done shows where it's like we looked back after the fact and it's like, well, was that, you know, was that the best way to launch at that? I think, I don't know. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So are there any comedians that you feel are sort of similar to him in a way, and the very story driven, that you can get that same vibe from him, or really that you enjoy?
Hannah Gadsby.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Annette, for sure.
That was similar. Tig Notaro.
Mm.
That was another storytelling.
And very personal. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
They let us in to a very intimate part of their life.
Yeah.
I really love British comedy. So Greg Davies.
Okay, yeah.
He's so good at the storytelling and just being authentic and making himself look like such an oaf on stage. And same with Jack Whitehall. He's got like a little bit more of a manic energy to him.
Yeah.
But it's still like he's real good at storytelling, and like, you know, like you said, going to the corner store to pick up a croissant, he could make it sound like the most epic journey.
Yeah.
And then he can tie it all together really well too. Those are two that I like.
I watched Pete Davidson's special recently, and that was somebody I actually was a little surprised that sort of had that feel
SNL.
To it. Yeah. So
It just came out on Netflix.
On Netflix, yeah. Okay, and cool. I was like, I didn't expect, because I mean, he was a stand-up first, but I mean, mm-hmm. he was doing it super young,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't expect him to be as story driven when it came to his special. I mean, it's still jokey, but it's really a through line about his experiences over the last couple of years. And
How was it?
It was better than I expected. I mean, I knew he was good. He's just not generally not being my kind of comedian in the stuff that I've seen, because it's sort of like just being a type, like a Cheech and Chong-y kind of humor, which is like, it's good. It's just not my bag.
Yeah.
But this one was more personal and more like he does this. He talks about his dad a bit, but he sort of like, he removes those jokes slightly from the rest of the set. Talked about like how, you know, his anxiety and depression and like how dating Ariana Grande really impacted that and for the worse in some ways, but also he has that to thank for almost all of his success in a lot of ways. So it's very personal, and it doesn't necessarily go into the same details, but it's like sharing these little intimate stories throughout, which is like, I was kind of shocked. But then you look at like, he hangs out with John Mulaney, who's I think one of the best comedians out there right now. So he's got a lot of people who believe in him, so there's got to be something there that for people to think. So yeah, that was one that I was sort of shocked by.
Interesting.
He sort of went down that path because I just expected him to be more jokey than that.
I also really loved the series Crashing.
Oh, yes.
It's Pete Holmes, right?
Yes, yeah, Pete Holmes.
I'm like, it's Pete something. I think it's Holmes, but I'm thinking about Mike Holmes as well.
You got to build a house and tell a joke. Yeah. Make it weird all at the same time.
Yeah, make it weird. Oh, I love that podcast. I really love that series. I felt like it was really... Yeah, I think being a stand-up is an incredibly vulnerable experience. And so it's nice when it's even more vulnerable. Yeah. And so Crashing was great just to be able to see sort of the inner workings of what it is.
Like a lot of people, I used to listen to this one podcast, and they're like, oh, it's just so, he's just using that trope of women being the driving force to his life, blah. And I'm like, well, no, that's his actual experience, his wife did cheat on him, and then they became friends afterwards, and it changed his life. Like, you can't, if you're telling a story based on truth, you can't change. I mean, you can heighten, but there's certain, you can't change those fundamental facts.
Right.
Or the fundamental like emotions that come along with it, which is what like nuances stories like that so much.
Well, and to be fair, like the funniest, The best comedy is based in real experience.
Yeah.
Because you can't make that shit up.
Oh, exactly.
Can't make that shit up, and that's what people resonate with. I think.
Yeah. When you speak from that core of honesty, when you're writing or even just riffing, it goes a lot longer and a lot further than something that's like, oh, this carefully constructed. And that's one of the things too. I find like there's literally a laugh every second sentence that in this album.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, just to wrap up, if someone was to ask you if they should listen to this album, what would you say?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Listen to it on a road trip to Regina.
But don't come back with herpes.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining me today. Thanks for coming to Toronto to do the sketch fest.
Thanks for having us on. Yeah.
And you have a recurring show at the Roxy right now going through till June, I think it was.
May 16th is our last show of this season, and then we'll be at the Edmonton Fringe. So
excellent.
Yeah, our next shows are March 27th and 28th at the Roxy.
Terrific. All right. Well, thanks again, and have a great day.
Thank you. You too, Matt.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.